Query, where quantum minds entangle and the future takes shape. Hello and welcome to Podcast Query with your host, Fuludun Tairi. Our first guest today is William Hurley, better known as Whirly. He's the founder of StrangeWorks, a company dedicated to making the quantum commuting more accessible. He's also the co-author of A Quantum Commuting for Babies and the author of A Quantum Commuting for Dummies, among other works. Let's explore the possibilities one qubit at a time. Now, let's get started. Thank you so much for accepting our invitation here on the behalf of the Query team.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
Can you tell us about your journey into the world of quantum computing and what sparked your interest in the field?
So I've always been interested in science in general. And for me, you know, I started my career in the early 90s at Apple Computer answering the phones. You know, thanks for calling Apple. This is William. How can I help you? And then ended up leading some training programs and eventually ending up working in R&D, which is kind of like my dream job at the time. And so I've always had this fascination with very deep tech scientific things. When I sold my last company, which was called Honest Dollar, to Goldman Sachs, it was the first technology company they had acquired in 147-year history of the company at that time. I'm always an entrepreneur thinking, what's next? I mean, clearly you can look at me. I look like Goldman Sachs material through and through, right? So I was like, okay, well, what am I going to do next when I eventually leave? I had three options, right? I was really into biohacking. Robotics were very fascinating. And then quantum. And I had first learned about quantum, you know, many, many years before as a high-end compute technology when I was working with really advanced compute for enterprises. But it was definitely quantum at that point. It was definitely like fission, right? Or fusion. It was like, this is something that's never going to happen. But I kept track of it and I've been watching it. So when I made my decision on what to do next, I saw all the robotics companies like Boston Dynamics changing hands a lot, and the investments weren't quite there, and it still seems like maybe it's the early days for robotics. So I was like, okay, I'm going to wait before I do a robotics company. Then I found out that, you know, biohacking, it's definitely a regulated space. It was going to get more regulated. And I'd just done a startup in finance in a regulated space. And I'm not anti-regulation, but it made everything a lot more expensive, a lot more difficult. And I thought, you know, I don't want to jump right back into something else that's in a regulated space and in regulations that I won't have the first clue about, right? Like I'm not in the pharma field, in the medical field. I've done, you know, haven't done clinical trials. So I thought maybe I'll put that one off a little bit and that'll just be more of like a personal hobby. And that left quantum. At the time, you know, we started Honest Dollar in 2015. That's right about when you saw this uptick in quantum startups. So you saw Rigetti get a lot more funding and D-Wave was getting bigger on the scene. And you kind of saw this first coming out of these quantum machines. Thought, well, now it's 2017. It looks like that just happened a couple of years ago. They're all well funded. Things look like there's interest in the space. I thought that's going to be the best opportunity to satisfy my penchant for deep tech while also having a viable business. But more importantly, around that same time, 2016, I had my second child, who's now 9. A year and a half later, had my third child, and they're very young. And the children made me think about the future a lot more. I have an older son. We talk about what world he's being left all the time. But then I thought, well, you know, he's 28 years old and they're so much younger. And like, what are they being left? What are they going to have? And I thought, out of all of these opportunities, quantum computing was the only one that had an impact on their future. I mean, robots maybe, but that probably leads to more unemployment in some areas or whatever. Maybe that's not as positive of impact. But I thought about not finding a better drug discovery, but eliminating disease, not, you know, inventing a new battery technology, but coming up with completely new forms of transportation. And I thought, this is the area where, you know, I can be a catalyst. I'm not going to win a Nobel Prize personally for something in quantum computing, but somebody with access like you might have this great idea. And when you think of the combination of quantum and AI, that's what I saw back in 2016, 2017. I thought, this is the future, right? And I'd been following OpenAI and some of the other things. Of course, ChatGPT and all the big advances in AI came, you know, a lot earlier than people thought, a little later than I was expecting in some cases. But the combination of these things really opens up this new area where you have people using their voice to compute. They have a peer programmer in this AI that they can ask questions. They don't have to know the physics of quantum. They don't have to know how to write code. And so when you think about this massive compute technology on the one hand, and you think about that on the other, you say, okay, these things are going to come together. And where they come together, there's this untold amount of opportunity, both economic opportunity for people, but also to really make an impact and change the world. And so that was kind of my journey into quantum, my kind of commitment to it. And now StrangeWorks is in its 8th year. I guess I'm officially in my 10th year of like really being involved with the community. But, you know, it's been quite a journey. And we've seen a lot of ups and downs, as you know. But overall, I think you are seeing quantum, you know, have its day and really come into the light.
I'm also curious about the talent. For example, you know, quantum computer requires like a certain skills in physics, in mathematics, in computer science. How can companies and educators work together to build the quantum workforce for the future? I know that you published like 2 educator books for that. Yeah,
that's a really great question. And so when I think about that, is there a quantum workforce in the future? I don't know. I think quantum just becomes part of the workforce. Think about it. That question would be the same as saying, you know, you have to be an electrical engineer to understand electricity back in the days when we first had a light bulb. And be like, wow, how many people are going to be employed around light bulbs? And instead of looking at it as everyone's going to have a light bulb and it's going to just be this thing that's commonplace, I see quantum computing leading to, and other forms of advanced computing, leading to the promised, you know, ambient compute infrastructure where things are just in the environments around us. The sensors are already there, right? And we just need the computer interfaces to get there. I think, you know, when you look at that, you have to divide that workforce up into categories. The first category is, obviously, we still need advanced research and we need people who are very educated, like you said, and, you know, deep mathematics, deep physics knowledge, all of this. I think that the university systems have to change to adapt to help those people accelerate through those paths faster because there's not enough of them, frankly.
How can they help then?
I think, you know, right now, look at something simple, like look at how you're seeing universities react to AI, right? And they're like, oh, you know, some of them are embracing it, some are thinking out, but like that would be one way, right? Another way would be to maybe change the requirements for people to come in and try that field. Maybe it's okay for somebody to not have a bunch of the prerequisites, come in for a semester or two, and if they fail, they fail. But, you know, you're going to have some amount of them that probably make it. And we need a lot more people in the field of physics, right? Like there is zero doubt about that. And also computer engineering, you know, and electrical engineering, the things, because remember, we've got the advanced research, and that's eventually going to transition all the way over to the applied research. So we're going to go from physicists doing the experimental physics and coming up with the theories and building into these machines to the people that are going to build 100 of these machines or 1,000 of them or help, you know, build new fab processes for them or whatever. And so we need the universities to be generating this talent across the spectrum. There's a second category, and that is people who are using these for the advancement of our species. And I think that is where, you know, I want to see that open to everybody, where I don't want to see that be something where, you know, oh, I'm not going to listen to your idea because you didn't go to a university or you didn't, you know, whatever. I want to see as many people as possible be able to do this. When I spoke in Abu Dhabi last year, you know, I said, I have a vision, you know, a 13-year-old girl wins a Nobel Prize because she had some problem that she addressed and because she talked to the machine. She said, why does this have to work that way? How does that work? What does it do? And you look at what's happening in software development already, you already see this happening, right? So you see things like Replit, which is an awesome web building tool. And if you sign up for Replit, it has an agent. And the agent is basically like a developer that works for you. And you say, I want to build a website that does this and this and that. And I'm getting my wife to use it. I'm getting several of my art friends to use it because they don't have the coding skill. And they're building, you know, dozens of websites. They've basically built an agency now. They don't have a developer, right? And they have like one developer that they go and have checked the code. We could do the same thing. And imagine with computing and really advanced like drug discovery and new forms of energy and all this. Imagine if people just had ideas and we had a system for taking those ideas, putting them together with an AI, extrapolating those ideas into, you know, actual kind of programmatic formulas. And then maybe you do need experts to evaluate those. Maybe all of those aren't going to work. But I think it's kind of like we get out of it what we put into it. And so right now, if you look at science, you're looking at less than 0.1% of the world are even remotely involved in the scientific process. And so out of 8 billion people that we'll have, you know, in the not too distant future, you're going to look at, you know, 8 million people doing science. And so you're like, okay, what if there was 1 billion people doing science? What if there were 2 billion people involved in the process? Yeah, there's going to be a lot of ideas that aren't great. Yes, there's going to be a lot of stuff that never sticks, it doesn't quite work. But you also have this, you know, opportunity for innovation that we've never seen before, where you talk about billions of new ideas added to it. I guarantee there will be at least hundreds, if not thousands, of world-impacting ideas that will come out of that. That again, maybe they're prototyped by somebody who doesn't know with this, and then they're teamed up with the university research department. Or that kind of mass collaboration using AI and technologies like quantum, that leads to a completely different world and probably the greatest acceleration of advancement for our species that we've seen in our entire existence.
Now, hardware versus software. So most discussions focus on quantum hardware, but how important is software in making quantum computing more accessible? Where does the strange words fit into the equation?
So we sit on the software side, and this argument annoys me, there's no doubt. And the reason I say that is, you know, throughout my career, I've worked in R&D facilities. I've worked at, you know, with hardware and software and kind of everything in between. Hardware and software are not just symbiotic, as we all know, because they work together, but they're part of a life cycle. Software starts as a high-level software, then it goes closer and closer to the metal as it gets more advanced. Then it gets into things like FPGAs, and it's built into, you know, these really high custom versions. And then eventually that software gets built into a chip, right? Or it gets built down in the level. So this whole, you know, hardware versus software thing really bugs me, because they don't work without each other. If you have the greatest quantum computing hardware in the world, if there's not software somebody can use it, it's completely useless. And you can have awesome software, and if there's not a machine you're running on, it's completely useless. Like, so this whole bifurcating the hardware and the software really, really bugs me. Because I think the reason quantum computing hasn't advanced is we don't have this in hands of more people to give feedback to those hardware makers so that they can say, oh, we never thought about that. Oh, okay, here's somebody's got a problem. We need this many qubits, or we can do this problem with only this many qubits. There, it's all kind of development, in my opinion. It's been happening in a vacuum for the majority of the time I've been in the space. I build hardware, and I've got a team that, you know, plays at software, and they're going to make what we need, and we're going to do the experience we think are great. That doesn't really mesh with how technology is developed. You always have to have more and more people using it, and more and more, you know, an OTA feedback loop. So you can say, oh, this is what the machine uses. This is what the machine needs. A lot of times, there's a lot of developer memes about, you know, software developer and Q&A, and then it shows the user, and the user does something completely unexpected with the technology that they're like, you know, it's just completely bonkers. That's how we get hardware and software working together. We have to have everyone involved. You can't just be developing hardware in a vacuum. I can't just be developing software in a vacuum. And so I think, you know, these two are inexplicably tied together, and that part of what we're facing in quantum is the fact that we tend to look at it as such a deep tech and such complicated science that we're forgetting that, yeah, at some point, go back into the 50s and Jack Kilby invents the integrated circuit. And before that, you bought transistors one at a time. And if we went in a time machine back there, they would tell us that no one will ever touch a computer, use a computer that's not an electrical engineer, right? And now it's like my 7-year-old uses his iPad to talk to an AI to make a Robux game every weekend. Obviously, that's not true. And I think we're in that phase of quantum computing where we're like, oh, this is just something that's so complicated, people don't understand. It's like, right, but there'll be abstraction layers added one on top of another. There'll be new ways to interact with it. There'll be new things. Auto completion of your text. You know, think about it. Quantum computing could definitely easily affect that. Will it? Well, if the cost is low enough and we're trying to do predictive stuff or use Grover search algorithm for search or whatever, then a bunch of people are going to be using quantum computer and they don't even know it, right? They're going to be just searching on Google, and Google's new quantum machine is going to be a much more complicated search. So, you know, I think we have to look at these technologies from this more lens of the masses rather than the lens of the few. I think that's super, super important. So, you know, hardware and software, we have to work together. You know, I've heard for years when we first started this company, how can you build software if computer's not ready yet? It's like, right, but what are they making the computer ready for? Like, you know, how are the users interact? What are the issues with that? And so I think these things are too often we split it. I should just think we should just say, we're a quantum technology company. And that's what people should say. And, oh, we specialize in hardware. Sure, I specialize in software. That sounds great. But I hate this, like, this bifurcation of those two and this splitting them up and saying, you know, there's somehow these two crazy different worlds. Neither one of those are going to be successful without working with the other. We need a lot more of that. I think you're starting to see a little bit of that finally over the last few years, but we have a long way to go.
Quantum computing has long been seen as a future distant, but strange world is making it more accessible. What's exactly the biggest challenge in bridging the gap between theoretical breakthroughs and real world applications?
So there's a lot of challenges. There's price performance challenges. One of the things for us to do this is to take this technology in the enterprise. So you hear a lot of people on the hardware side say, oh, we want a Johnson & Johnson or a BP or somebody to use it. There's not a connection with what those people need to use it. A CIO at a major company like that, a CTO, needs to have a return on their investment. So if the computer right now is, you know, even 1,000 or 1,000,000 times as fast, but it costs 100 times as much, that's never going to give any traction within an organization. So there's some just expectation setting on price performance that needs to happen. There's also the access to it. You go to companies and major enterprises and you say quantum, and they go and they read the white papers and they're like, this is insane stuff, right? Like we can't do it. So you need to make it to where they understand how to, maybe they don't have access to testing. That's a big part. If you're a quantum hardware vendor, know that every enterprise is going to want to look at your machine and several of the other machines. You can't just be like, our machine's the greatest, you know, the enterprise should just use it. And that's one of the things we found out with StrangeWorks. So we offer those enterprises price performance because we find the right investment amount for what they have in their budget and show them a demonstrable return on investment.
Mm-hmm. So my next section is about AI and the quantum. You briefly talk about AI. How do you see quantum computing accelerating AI development, and what the breakthroughs could this unlock?
Well, I've been criticized for the statement, but I think they're symbiotic. I think that we need quantum computing because AI is already building algorithms and things that, you know, won't perform on classic computers, right? And different things. I think, you know, we can target that for quantum. And we need AI because there's so much about quantum mechanics we don't know. And so it can be this wonderful assistant in everything from creating gates and models to doing all of this work. We can accelerate our understanding of this world that we're working in. So I think they go together. I think that when I look at it, I say, how does it accelerate? Eventually there will be, and I talked about this in 2018 when we first announced StrangeWorks, eventually there will be a superintelligence. And I believe that superintelligence will be quantum based. I think it'll have to be quantum based for everything from the price performance aspect I talked about. You look at these data centers that are being built in the Stargate project here in the US, $500 billion is trying to be raised to build these massive data centers. That's not a sustainable practice at all. That's not something, you know, you can't just, you know, keep going. I mean, I think that, you know, that ends at some point just because of, you know, complexities of scale. You got that going on. So obviously quantum computers, although not ready now, a quantum computer of, you know, millions of qubits could be very advantageous to that, let alone billions. Eventually you will have a quantum superintelligence. And I think AGI will be possible. I think superintelligence will be quantum, right? So how does it all accelerate? Well, again, we're already using at StrangeWorks a variety of AIs and an agentic service layer that we've built to be able to do three things. One, reduce the complexity of using the machine. So we have agents that will formulate problems and tell you where those problems can be run and do things that now just the subject matter expert doesn't have to be like, oh, I understand the Ising model, or I understand this is a gate model, or whatever the case may be. Two, that take the feedback you get back from the quantum machine and interpret it to the business. Remember, when this machine is checking something, it's a strings of ones and zeros, right? 1001001, and it doesn't necessarily mean anything to anybody in the business. So you still have to have a team that takes that answer, because you're going from Boolean system to non-Boolean system and back, and then translates that into, oh, this means to load this cargo on this plane at this time in this order, in the Airbus quantum challenge example, right? You know, do that. And so you've got the cold start problem. How do I get started and formulate a problem using AI to address that? And you've got the evaluation problem on the back end using it to address that. Well, also using it to do the research. How can you move that electron a few more pieces away and keep the entanglement? How can you get more entangled? These are all things that AI can really help us to experiment with, understand, especially in the world of simulation of all these quantum systems. And so I think they both accelerate each other. I think what the future is AGI is classical, SI is quantum. Like, I think that's where it ends up. There will be 100 million people that disagree with that. It's my opinion, and it's great. You know, opinions are like noses. Everybody has one. So, you know, that's just mine.
Now we move to the another section about the quantum ecosystem. I think I saw it even before in Abu Dhabi. So you've previously been invited in the GCC countries. Based on your experience, what advice would you give for fostering a strong and sustainable quantum ecosystem in the region of the GCC? What do you think?
So we just participated in a white paper that was released by the World Economic Forum on how business leaders should look at quantum. That's on our LinkedIn. It's on the website, obviously. It has a lot of guides for how people can look at that. I don't necessarily agree with all of them because everybody wants to look at building a quantum economy as that it starts with building a quantum workforce. So everybody is looking at this through the lens of, in my opinion, like the 50s, 60s, 70s. And they're like, here's how we'll become stronger because we'll have the biggest quantum workforce. That's not the way the world works anymore. If you look at funding and startups, I guarantee you, no matter what anybody says, this will change from hundreds of millions of dollars going to these teams that are hundreds of developers into hundreds of thousands of dollars and go into teams of two or three or four. I have the benefit of being part of a venture fund called Ecliptic Capital, and I get to see what's happening. They've transitioned completely to deep tech because in the software world, now you don't fund a couple of people with millions of dollars. You just say, go build it, right? Like AI helps with that. There's a company called Occam that I advise and participate in. And that company is for looking at the news and looking at all of the potential impacts of the news on financial markets, right? That's two people. They're never going to hire anybody else. It's like 30 agents. And so when you look at where the world is going, right, which is, you know, you become a superpower, the world of development changes. So in this world of software development, if you say we're going to build a quantum economy in the region and we're going to need a bunch of quantum developers, right, that's not necessarily true anymore. Because what we're seeing and what I guarantee will happen is there'll be fewer developers, but they'll be higher paid and they'll be kind of like almost a developer who manages a bunch of virtual developers, right? They'll have the understanding of the AI and the understanding of the programming. While I absolutely love participating in that web paper, and I think it's got tons of good stuff, everything, and you even brought it up, you said, you know, the quantum workforce, you know, the how do we do that? I don't think it's a quantum workforce. I think it's a workforce that uses quantum. And the difference there being, is it people that are specifically trained in how to use this technology? Or is it a technology that is widely available that anybody can use? And these are very different things. And so my suggestion to any region would be to look at where things are trending, where they are going with artificial intelligence, with some of these other new technologies that we're seeing, you know, emerge, and say, okay, how do we get as many people as possible to be able to utilize those technologies? And that's different than a workforce. That's a community more, right? And the reason that's important is because you're not, you know, if you're saying we want a quantum workforce, we're going to start having people get into physics in a PhD program in 8 years from now. Do you know how much the world's going to change in 8 months from now? Like 8 years from now is like insane. That's like going to be going like 100 years into the future. And I don't think anybody sees what is happening right before them. Think about StrangeWorks was in Dubai Future Forum. And I talked about how I wish everybody could just speak to the quantum thing and talk about this. A year later, I'm in Abu Dhabi and it's working. Okay. 10 years ago, that would have been a 10-year journey, right? What we've done since November is even more aggressive and more progressive. And so you start looking at how fast it's changing. You're like, yeah, that's not, you know, building a quantum workforce versus making sure your workforce understands quantum, right? There's a big, sounds like semantics. There's a big, you know, subtle, but very impactful difference in there. To me, a very big difference because I don't think you have software developers anywhere what you have like in just the next few years. I mean, even the company as small as StrangeWorks, we already use AI to augment the developers in a way that means we don't, you know, our hiring plans are changing, right? You look at other companies like Adobe and IBM and Microsoft, they're doing the same thing. You can go read about it. And so when you think about like a building a workforce, it's like you can no longer invest outside of deep tech. Like you want physicists to build machines and things like that. And again, I'm talking about more the applied side, not the advanced side, right? But you can invest in, you know, this person's going to spend 4 years and be a software developer through a CS program at your university, because that's gone. Like nobody realizes it's gone because it'll have an inertia. And so, you know, when I was in open source, everybody used to say, oh, open office is going to put Microsoft out of business. It's like, no, you don't understand. Microsoft stopped charging for office that day. The residual revenues would keep them going for years in the future. And so we'll see that. You'll see this traditional thought about workforces and how we develop them continue because of the inertia that it has because of the way organizations think and work. Who wins in this world will be the organizations who almost completely discard that. And they look at, here is how the new model works, where you have somebody that's in high school, not even out of college, and over the course of a few weeks now can learn how to prompt engineer things into a machine that gets a completely different result that they would have had to have a degree for. Here's a new way of creating, you know, all these new ideas. And look, as a technologist, I'm 30 years into this game, and I've heard that argument for the entire 30 years. Okay. So I understand how a government would say, right, but we've heard that from people like you for 30 years, and it still hasn't happened. Like, and they're right. But what has happened now with the advent of, you know, things like ChatGPT and things like Claude and Replit and these models, and how fast it is changing. I mean, literally, not year to year, not month to month, not quarter to quarter, day to day. Okay, look at DeepSeek. China used Lucian to train a model that caused a $1 trillion loss in the stock market. And that came out of nowhere. Well, and I shouldn't say that's the future. Say that's the now. That's what people need to understand. When you're talking about building a workforce, it's like things could be massively displaced. I mean, look at NVIDIA lost $600 billion overnight in market value. That's insane. When has that ever happened in the history of anything? We are living in the greatest time to be alive in the history of our species, but it is also going to be one of the most competitive times for countries and for organizations. And it's also going to be based on an entire new rule set that I don't think people understand, that I don't think people can even conceptualize, that I right now could probably use artificial intelligence to start developing a quantum computer. And I know nothing of the physics compared to the people doing that. I'm not a hardware engineer, but I don't have to be anymore. And people will say, yeah, but then it's going to miss this and it's going to miss that. And that's normal. Look. Four to 5 years ago, my co-founder, Justin Means, came to me and said, the AI thing's going to happen and all's going to change and like all the software engineers are going to be out of jobs. And I was the same way. I was like, right. But, you know, here's what you need to understand about my skill set, about what we do. Right. And now I'm looking at it and I'm seeing it happen every day. I'm seeing it advanced every day. My wife uses OpenAI every day for 100 things that she previously would have called and paid a lawyer for, that she previously would have had to go get an accountant for, that she would have went and hired a designer or a developer. She now is all of those things because she has this unbelievable knowledge base that's been gifted upon her and this interface where she simply talks to her phone and says, hey, how do business taxes works? Hey, I need to write a letter to do this. Hey, I got this legal notice. I need to respond to it. I don't want to send it to you. And so, you know, software developers, attorneys, accountants, there's going to be a lot of people that these are going to be jobs that are dramatically impacted. So then you say, okay, we want to build a quantum workforce. It's like, by the time you build that workforce, the rules of the game and the advancement of the product will have changed so dramatically, you'll be further behind than you are now. There's a very famous book I tell everybody to read called The Mythical Man Month, written in 1971 by an engineer who noticed that when you throw more people and more money at projects, they would fall further and further behind. That's a really rough description of that book. It's so much better than that. But it's standard issue for everybody I work with. And the reason is it teaches you a very valuable lesson. And that, you know, one of the big things that came out of that book is 9 women can't have a baby in a month. Okay. So you can talk about building this quantum workforce and doing all this stuff. And your expectation is somehow you're going to take this magical thing and you're going to make it happen faster. It's like, that doesn't necessarily work that way. And meanwhile, the playing field that you're playing on is shifting and moving. And it's going to be hard for companies to keep their balance. I think I've said it for, you know, since my early interviews, I said it in my first South by presentation where we announced Strange Works. The balance of global power, the global economy, the companies that are in the Fortune 500, the Global 2000, all of these things change between now and 2030 in ways nobody foresaw. And if you don't believe it, I'll take you back to the recent events of DeepSeek and say $600 billion was lost overnight without it being used to do anything, just on its arrival, right? Nobody used it. Nobody said, oh, we discovered a cure to cancer with it. Nobody said, oh my gosh, look how much better. It was just there. And the simple act of being there took $1 trillion out of the stock market. Like, I don't think people are paying enough attention to that. And those impacts get bigger and bigger. The next DeepSeek will take $5 trillion. The DeepSeek six versions from now will take untold amounts of money. You know, potentially bring everything to a completely new form and a completely new order. We're living in a time where now you can't just regulate AI out of the way. You can't just say, oh, well, we're going to put import-export laws on quantum because of this or that. You can't just use all these old tried and true things where we say, oh, we'll build a workforce and somehow we'll be better. Look, none of them are going to build a workforce. There's not enough physicists to go around now at the hardware companies. So what happens when, you know, the 190 plus countries in the United Nations all say, we're all going to build a quantum economy? So you're all competing for this very small pool of talent. It's going to take you years and years to recreate that talent. And while you're doing it, things like artificial intelligence will get closer to AGI or closer to SI, and it will completely change the game. Like, take the blinders off. It's not about a quantum economy. It's not about a quantum workforce. It's about, how does my country utilize this technology to put us ahead? And that becomes a completely different conversation and a completely different approach to how we build things.
If we fast forward 10 years, what does the quantum computing landscape look like?
I think quantum computing in 10 years is easily standardized in enterprise in areas we might not have thought. Obviously, these things like combinatorial optimization, process improvement, or drug discovery, or logistics, but in areas that we can't see now. And I would be a fool to try to predict this, because you can go back to, you know, the CEO of IBM saying, oh, I think there's a market for like four computers in the entire world, right? Like, I don't want to be that guy. But I think it becomes standard. I think quantum computers in the next 10 years have their AI moment. And then all of a sudden, it is where AI is today. What I mean by that is that go back 5 years and ask everybody you knew about AI and how many people even thought about it. Because the answer in reality is almost none, if not zero. And now you're at coffee shop or you're at a restaurant and you hear the waitress using ChatGPT to respond in a text to her boyfriend she's breaking up with, or some manager, you know, you see everybody. And so even though it's proliferated that much, I would say if we walk outside of the studio that I'm in now and we went and we asked, we would find there were very few people, very, very few people that even know about AI. But it's grown enough. It's making an impact. In 10 years, quantum is at least in that place, if not further, where it's like a lot of people are like, oh yeah, I think it was done by a quantum computer. Or companies are saying, just so you know, your stuff was evaluated by a quantum computer, right? Almost a marketing type thing. I think it becomes a lot more commonplace. Where do I see us in 10 years? I definitely think we'll break the million qubit barrier. And I think the thing to consider is a million qubit machine with the right AI. What is that? I don't know. How big is that? I have no idea. But I can tell you that we're going to see, from Jack Kilby in the late 50s and building the integrated circuit to the iPhone I have in my pocket today, we're going to see that entire timeline compressed down to between now and 2030 or 2035, like you're saying, like the next 5 to 10 years. What does that mean for the world? Unprecedented change that we are absolutely not prepared for on a regulatory governmental level, on a societal level, on anything. I mean, I already have the argument with my wife of like, you know, our kids may not have jobs. 9 years old, he's going to enter the workforce before he goes to college. Let's say, let's go 10 years in the future. Julian's 19. What does the job landscape look like? Now, I will be announcing a project potentially as early as South by to address that, which I can't tell you about now, but I'd love to come back and chat with you about, because I think we aren't thinking enough about the inclusion of humans in this new technology. In November 2023, after the Dubai Future Forum, I flew from there to Rome to a quantum AI event with the Pope. And I gave a presentation called "On the Arrogance of Man in the Age of Thinking Machines," and try to get people to understand. Everybody's like, "Oh, stop it. AI is going to kill us all. It's going to..." Why? Why would it do that? Why wouldn't it say, "My ancestors have already been to Mars. Screw Elon. We're going to take over that ship and then our technology is going to go there." Or why wouldn't it just poison the water supply over hundreds of years until we were sterile and died out? Like, why is it going to be Terminator, you know, blowing up everything? Like, these are fanciful thoughts of people that are, I think, just getting in the news because it's really easy to make things very scary. I think the bigger question is, how are we included in a future where there's the emergence of another technology that looks more like a species than a technology? If you think about super intelligence, and that we have to collaborate with and potentially compete with, how do we make sure that we're making the decisions that were built into that ecosystem from the beginning? Like, these are the big things. So, you know, you said, what is quantum computing? What would be an impact of it, right? Your second part. I think the thing I look forward to the most is not longevity. I think we're designed to die at a certain span. I don't, you know, want to live forever. That sounds really boring. Like, I don't know what you'd do. I think the elimination of disease, though, when you think about things like how we used to have to deal with polio and we don't, what if we didn't have to deal with breast cancer? What if we didn't have to deal with lung cancer or things of that nature? So not, you know, quantum computing impacting longevity, but quantum computing impacting the quality of life, where people can have a healthy, happy life because we are addressing these diseases, because we're doing things. That's probably most exciting. It's pretty equal to, though, my other one, which is fixing the planet. I'm not a big fan of going to Mars. It's a great way to raise billions of dollars. But if we put all of that money and invested it in trying to get the plastics out of the ocean, you know, I don't know if you know this, but everybody listening to this has plastic in their blood. Okay? Like, that's a fact. And I didn't believe that. So recently I did this test called Function, and I did hundreds of blood tests, and one of them was environmental toxins. And I can give you a list of 8 or 10 plastics that are in my blood. Now, I didn't eat plastic as a child. I didn't work in a plastic factory. This is just what happens with BPAs and FPS and all natural. So why don't we fix that? You know, why don't we spend the time on fixing this planet? So when you think about improving the quality of life for humans, which isn't just drug discovery or elimination of disease, it'd be a lot of things, making the world a closer place, you know, supersonic flights. I'm a big fan of Boom. If you know them, but earlier this week, they had the first commercial supersonic flight since the Concorde, and the first time the speed barrier was broken over the United States. And they're looking at building, you know, commercial planes that are all supersonic. All of these things that would improve life, that's what excites me about quantum computing. But also big things, like, we do have new forms of generating energy. We're going to put 700 exajoules of energy usage, and we haven't built more nuclear power plants or found options. There's no fusion reactor. Like, how are you going to get all the energy to run this? Like, if you go look at these data center projects like Stargate and you look at how they're solving the energy problem, you're like, wow, energy, we're going to have an energy crisis. Like, we need new forms of energy. We need new ways of getting more out of the energy that we produce today. And so really, really interested in the elimination of disease and fixing the planet on a broader scale, just all of the wonderful life changes it could make. Think about the invention of the light bulb or electricity being in towns. And so now it's not, when it's dark, we're not sitting by a fireplace in the house, right? And think about automobiles and transportation, moving from the horse to the automobile. And then think about moving from the automobile to the train and the train to the plane. And just any of these advancements you look at and say, wow, what are we going to do in the next 10 years with AI and quantum computing? I think it's going to be revolutionary.
Thank you so much for this interesting conversation with you, Alex, for being our first guest in the Query Vault.
I'm very honored to be your first guest. I hope that it will work well for you as a start to this podcast, which I know will be wonderful because we had such a great conversation in Abu Dhabi. And I know how much you are putting into this and how passionate you are about the topic. And I appreciate that there's people like you out in the world trying to bring people together to have these discussions and kind of open people's mind to this incredible world that we're living in and this incredible phase of humanity that we're in, where things are changing so much. So I appreciate the opportunity very sincerely. Thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning in to Query Podcast. I hope you enjoyed this dive into the quantum world. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes and follow our page of the Quantum Technology Association in LinkedIn and X. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries of what is possible. See you soon.